When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we are talking today about interracial marriage because earlier this year in 2012, the Pew Center for Research released a study talking about how interracial marriage is at an all-time high in the United States. And this is something also that, a topic that a number of listeners have requested for a while now. And we decided, hey, it's high time we talk about this.
Yeah. And I think the most interesting thing about this topic, and I was telling Kristen this before we started recording, actually, is that you can look at this from a historical perspective, all the way up through now, that the rise in interracial marriage is really linked to the broader nature of race relations in general, society, as things, not just interracial marriage, as a lot of things in society become more accepted. Obviously, they become more popular. That seems to be common sense. But you can definitely track that as more people have an open attitude about people of different races and ethnicities marrying each other, it happens more often.
Right. And that also is going to be linked to the constitutionality of interracial marriage in the landmark case of Loving versus Virginia. But first, let's go way back and talk about what led to initially the crackdown on interracial sex, which was, that was the first main concern back in colonial days in the United States. And apologies to international listeners. This is very U.S. centric, but, I think there's still a lot of lessons that can be taken from this. So going back, in time, and this is referencing a paper written by Aaron Gullickson, published in the Journal of Family History in July 2006. And he looks at interracial sex versus interracial marriage, and also the concomitant rise of anti-miscegenation statutes.
So when people started first coming over to the New World back in the 17th century, white indentured servitude was just as commonplace as black slavery for the most part. That does turn, obviously, where indentured servitude from whites falls by the wayside. But during that time, when they were side by side, slave owners had this big fear that indentured servants who were white might band together with black slaves in open rebellion. So there was all that, there was this big push to keep them separate, and that if they had sex, if they had any type of relationship, developed any sort of allied relationship, that they would turn against
the elite white class.
Yeah, and that was the origin of those first statutes that we have saying, hey, whites and blacks, no sex, no, and certainly no marriage. But then Aaron Gullickson goes on to trace a decline in interracial marriage and interracial sex in places where interracial marriage would not have been legal from 1880 to 1930, along with the growth of Jim Crow laws in the post-Civil War South and racial segregation that is happening in the North. And then from 1930 to 1940, for a little window of time, there's actually an increase in interracial relationships because of the waning of that Jim Crow system. And then from there, once we hit the civil rights era and beyond, there has been a steady exponential growth that gets us up to 2012, to where we have it at an all-time high.
Right. But to go back to that civil rights era, there was an excellent article in the Harvard Crimson in 1963 that American racism rests upon social practice, but is, quote, strongly bulwarked by many state and local laws. And so they talk about how this anti-miscegenation legislation most directly protects, quote, racial integrity. All of these fears about what happens if you get people from different races having children.
Right, because obviously, like, the days of slavery are long gone, but there's still so much racial and racist tensions going on between, especially coming from white lawmakers who want to keep the races separate. I mean, this is the era, too, of in 1963, when this article is being written, it's only been 10 years since Brown versus Board of Education, which struck down that separate but equal clause. It said, hey, you know, it's fine if we, you know, we can just maintain our own spaces. We don't need to really hang out together, right? But then on June 12th, 1967, the Supreme Court finally declared anti-miscegenation laws to be unconstitutional, essentially banning or prohibiting blacks and whites or people from any races from marrying each other. They said it can't happen anymore, United States.
Right. And yeah, this is Loving v. Virginia, which Kristen mentioned. This was an amazing case because these were two people who loved each other who had to leave Caroline County, Virginia to go to Washington, D.C. to get married because that's where it was legal. So in 1958, Richard, who was white, and Mildred, who was black, go to D.C. to get married. When they return to Virginia, they are promptly arrested, jailed, and banned from the state for 25 years for violating the state's Racial Integrity Act. There's those words again, racial integrity.
And I would be curious to know whether or not it might have had the swiftness with which the Lovings were arrested. I wonder if it also had something to do with the fact that they got married because they found out, too, that Mildred was pregnant. And so there's that old fear that comes up again. It's not so much of people having sex, but more marriage and procreation. And so once they are banned from the state in 1963, obviously they want to return home. They want to be able to go back to Caroline County, but they don't know what to do. And so Richard Loving actually writes a letter to then Attorney General Robert Kennedy asking whether or not there is anything with the Civil Rights Act that could apply to their case and allow them to go home to have that case struck down. And Robert Kennedy then refers them to the ACLU. And in 1965, the ACLU petitions the court to strike down that former ruling, but the court in Virginia is like, no. But then they say, all right, let's take it up, you know, the flagpole to the Supreme Court.
Right. And Chief Justice Earl Warren basically said that the act, the Racial Integrity Act, serves no purpose but that of invidious racial discrimination, which is basically discrimination designed to oppress a particular group or brand its members as inferior. And this gets into the whole idea of things that seem okay, innocuous, acceptable now, at a separate time, at a different time in the past, may have seemed like something terrible.
Specifically, the Supreme Court found that they were in violation of the 14th Amendment, or the Equal Protection Clause. And there was a constitutional scholar that talked about how this is a reflection of the way that the changing mindset of society changes in a way or has evolved that concept of the 14th Amendment and of that equal protection. Because if this case had come up, say, 100 years prior, when, yeah, equal protection for black people did not exist at that time, so how could the 14th Amendment apply to them in this case? But having moved forward to, you know, the late 60s, we have civil rights going on, there is a social tide that is turning, then you could have that ruling come down. And so all of these anti-miscegenation laws are found unconstitutional.
Right. Well, so then that takes us all the way to now with the release of this Pew Research Center report, which shows how common interracial marriages these days. And they found that about 15% of all new marriages in 2010 were between spouses of a different race or ethnicity. And that's up from 6.7% in 1980.
Yeah. And I would argue that now the changes that we're seeing in these percentages, like we have, like legally, you know, the doors are open. And since then, it's been more of a journey of acceptance for interracial couples, because it's not like the Supreme Court handed down that Loving v. Virginia decision on June 12th, 1967. And suddenly everyone was like, oh, cool. Okay. Let's
finally,
all watch
yeah.
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner and we can be just one big happy multi-ethnic family, right? No, but the good news is that those perceptions are changing.
Yeah, and to look at the percentages of just who's doing what, the term marrying out, that's, you know, marrying out someone outside of your own race or ethnic group, 28% of Asians married out in 2010, 26% of Hispanics, 17% of African Americans, and 9% of whites.
Yeah, and I know he said that there was 15% of all new marriages, and that's new marriages in 2010 reached that that all-time high. But then if you look at all marriages as one big pot, not just new marriages, this is from 2010, they make up 8.4%, which is still, obviously, that's not, you know, a huge percentage, but it's still up significantly from 1980 when it was only 3.2%. And then if we look down at gender patterns, there are some interesting things going on there as well. For instance, about 24% of all black male newlyweds in 2010 married outside of their race, compared with 9% of black female newlyweds, whereas the situation is flipped when it comes to Asian Americans.
Right, yeah. 36% of Asian female newlyweds married outside their race, compared with just 17% of Asian male newlyweds.
And economically, the annual earnings of interracial couples are about the same as the median earnings of, I guess, what did you call that, same race?
Married in, whether they're marrying in or marrying
okay.
out.
Okay, yeah. So married out couples, married in couples, all making about the same thing. But there are some differences when you further break that down into different races and ethnicities.
Yeah, it turns out that white/Asian couples, so when one person's white, one person's Asian, they have the highest median combined annual earnings.
Yeah.
That's $70,952.
And that's not entirely surprising, because when it comes to couples that marry in, Asians, again, may make the most money, $62,000 average.
Yeah, followed by white couples. So I guess you put them together and they make $70,000.
Oh, and a lot of times that is attributed to, I guess, education, background, things like that. Regionally, 22% of all newlyweds in Western states married out, and 14% in the South. You know, we think about, you know, maybe like the South not being as interracial friendly, but indeed, maybe because of more racial diversity in the South. I don't know. Don't call me an ethnographer. Followed by 13% in Northeast and 11% in the Midwest. And Hawaii is quite the hub.
So, yeah, in Hawaii, rate of 42% of interracial marriages between 2008 and 2010.
But I would argue that more so than just basic demographics, in terms of really the significance of this dial shifting in terms of the rise of interracial marriage, is how our public acceptance of interracial relationships have changed. And according to these Pew statistics, 43% say that people of different races marrying each other has been a change for the better. Now, 11% say that that has been a change for the worst. And 44% say, hey, you know what? It does make a difference.
Yeah. The people who are more likely to see interracial marriage in a positive light include minorities, younger adults, the college educated, people who refer to themselves as liberal, and people living in the Northeast or the West.
And for just a couple more percentages, 63% of people in this 2012 survey said it would be fine if a family member married out of their race, and 35% said a member of their immediate family or a close relative is currently married to someone of a different race. So if we are not ourselves, we tend to know people. We usually think it's fine. It's only a minority, that 11%, who still take a negative view of it. And I would assume that 11% might be a generational difference.
Yeah.
These are probably older people who remember and live through the times when it wasn't okay for us to all get along.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced.
Bring it on.
Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Well, I think an interesting case study in it being acceptable or not comes from Alabama.
Yes.
Alabama has a history, and in 1999... the Alabama Senate voted to repeal the state's constitutional prohibition against interracial marriage.
Yeah, I mean, what that means is not that interracial marriage was illegal in Alabama. Obviously, like, once the Supreme Court handed down that 67 decision, like, yes, you could get married anywhere, but it was still
on the books,
hanging out on the books.
Yeah.
And it didn't go.
Yeah, State Representative Phil Krigler at the time said that he personally was opposed to interracial marriage, but he voted for the repeal basically because it wasn't enforced. Like, the prohibition of interracial marriage wasn't enforced, so he'll go ahead and vote for it. Fine. And then there's State Representative Alvin Holmes, because, you know, so here's Krigler saying, well, it's not enforced anyway, but State Representative Alvin Holmes, who's the one who really pushed for the repeal for years, said that in parts of rural Alabama, probate judges were still refusing to issue marriage licenses to some interracial couples.
Right. And this, I mean, this is something that still happens. There was a story, and not just in Alabama. And we should also mention, too, for our listeners in Alabama who are like, wait, no, that public opinion polls found that a majority of Alabama voters would definitely be in support of the state repealing that. But this was reported in the Christian Science Monitor in October 2009 of a Louisiana justice of the peace who refused to marry a white woman and a black man because he believed children of an interracial marriage would suffer socially. And we will get into that misguided claim as well. So there are, unfortunately, still these pockets of racist fear, you know, to call it what it is, between intermarriage. But for one more bit of information, where interracial marriage has actually gone down, one group that's gone down with is, again, with Asian Americans.
Yeah, so we mentioned that the highest percentage of people marrying outside their race is Asians. But that 28% of Asians who married out in 2010 is actually down from 31% in 2008. And so there's all these like theories being batted around, like this one New York Times writer said that there's a resurgence of interest in language and ancestral traditions. But Wall Street Journal writer Jeff Yang in April 2012 disputes that. And he said that, A, it's more about shared experiences and backgrounds, not so much that you're going to marry someone just because you guys can speak a language or have shared ancestry. He also says that there's just more Asian people in this country now.
He pointed out that Asian Americans were the fastest growing ethnic group in the United States from 2000 to 2010. They grew by 46%. So he's saying, hey, you know what? Maybe it's not so much of, you know, we're all learning Mandarin and taking an interest. And yeah, then that's just one example for, you know, for this large swath of people and ethnic backgrounds I'm talking about. But he said it's probably more a fact that there are simply more of us.
Right. And he cites sociologist C.N. Lee, who found that since 2006, the frequency of inter-Asian marriage, so not just a Chinese person marrying another Chinese person, but, you know, maybe someone of Thai descent marrying someone of Filipino descent, that kind of thing. Basically, he says that they're not necessarily marrying, quote, their particular flavor of Asian American. And so because of this, inter-Asian marriage has risen by more than 8% among all Asian Americans and more than 15% among Asians raised here in the U.S.
But to transition to the next thing that we need to touch on, there was a story in the Washington Post kind of linked to this rise of interracial marriage. It was an article on the also rise of biracial and multiracial children as well. And they were talking about a first-generation Vietnamese woman who was married to a black man, and she was telling the Washington Post reporter about how her six-year-old daughter had started asking questions of, you know, why her skin looked different than her mom's, and the different kind of questions that they were starting to have to confront with this. And so that leads us to this issue of, well, what about the kids? Because I feel like that has been the, you know, the politely racist undertone question of, well, you know, well, you don't need, you know, we don't need to have interracial marriage because then these kids won't understand their identity. Who will they be? What box will they check?
Exactly. Yeah, this goes back to the Louisiana Justice of the Peace that Kristen mentioned earlier and the quote unquote tragic mulatto stereotype. Basically, like, yeah, these kids won't know who they are. They'll get bullied because they won't fit in with one race group or another race group. Like, they won't know where they fit. But the thing is, with a greater acceptance of interracial marriage comes a greater acceptance of multiracial and biracial children. And there is definitely a movement. There was one article that we read about students, was it College of Maryland, University of Maryland?
I think so.
Where they were forming a group to lend support, trade stories, you know, talk about like weird things that people ask them, like, what are you? So I think there is a greater movement towards acceptance in that arena, too.
Yeah, and props to the U.S. Census as well, because guess what? You can now check as many boxes as you want, because I don't think that for most Americans, really, if you go back and trace your heritage, one box would correctly apply.
Right. And so, you know, I mentioned college students. A New York Times article in January 2011 said that students moving through college right now include the largest group of mixed race people ever to come of age in the U.S. And they say, you know, it's not tragic, like that stereotype, that many young adults of mixed backgrounds are rejecting the color lines in favor of a more fluid sense of identity.
And interesting to see the different interpretations of that rejection of the color lines, as you put it, because, you know, optimistically it's saying, hey, maybe we are transcending race. We often hear the phrase like living in a post-racial era, which can be debated ad nauseum. And then there's the pessimistic side saying, well, this is only going to add more stratification because now we're going to have these subcategories of these categories and that's going to only make it even worse. And then sociologists, seem oddly concerned as well that grouping all multiracial people together is going to gloss over differences in their circumstances. But really, that sounds like sociologists just being like, hey, we're going to have to do more work now. I don't want to do that. Although I love sociology. No offense, sociologists out there. I'm sure you are all hardworking.
But yeah, really nobody needs to worry too terribly much, I think, because a 2008 study of 182 mixed-race California high schoolers found that these kids really didn't focus on exclusionary features like skin color or hair texture when talking about themselves. They really seemed to look at their unique heritage as a positive. They, you know, it made them unique. As the writer says, you know, these kids can put one foot in one group, one foot in another group, and that sort of serves to possibly buffer them from, you know, negative consequences of feeling, as they say, feeling tokenized.
Mm-hmm.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
So the whole excuse of, I don't want to grant you a marriage license or perform a ceremony because you're black and you're white and your kids might suffer.
Well, yeah. And then also, if there's anything, too, that we have learned from the podcast research that we have done on parenting topics and child outcomes, is that you can't narrow a child outcome down to one single dependent variable that's going to change the entire equation.
Yeah.
You know, the color of your skin is not going to say, you don't look exactly like your mom and dad, so sorry, tough road to hoe ahead. No, not at all. And really, the fact of the matter is, the broader the social acceptance continues to become, then I think that we're going to look back in 20, 50 years, and that's going to be a moot point, this whole idea of potential negative child outcomes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an outdated argument.
Because, yeah, the children grow up and become normal adults with normal adult problems that aren't necessarily related to what color their parents are,
right,
what color their skin is.
And I know we kind of mentioned this earlier in the podcast, but can you think of a better landmark case to strike down, like, the unconstitutionality of interracial or anti-interracial marriage laws, but loving v. Virginia?
Yep.
Doesn't it make your heart just a little bit warmer? Or wait, would that make you unhealthy? Does that mean I've got a fever? I don't know.
A fever for love.
A fever for love for everyone. So that's it. I feel like we just offered a snapshot. There's so much more that we could talk about. But for now, this is where we are in 2012,
yeah,
with interracial marriage. So I want to hear from folks out there who have maybe confronted this, who have dealt with this, who are in interracial relationships. People from other countries who might be listening, how this, our social situation here compares to what's going on where you are. Let us know. MomStuff@discovery.com is where you can send your letter. And first, before we get to your listener mail, we have a quick word from Netflix, who kindly brought us this episode of Stuff Mom Never Told You. So for a limited time, listeners of Stuff Mom Never Told You can head over to Netflix.com/stuff and browse their enormous library of movies and television shows and get a free trial membership. We were thinking that Stuff Mom Never Told You listeners might enjoy going to Netflix.com/mom and looking at how stuff works. That's right. If you go into the documentary section, they do offer how stuff works from the Discovery Channel. It is a series of shows based on the cool stuff that we do at How Stuff Works. So don't delay, because titles are subject to availability, but head on over to Netflix.com/mom so that you can get your free trial membership. Now back to our letters.
And here's a letter from Betty about our Femphobia podcast. She wanted to share some perspective. She says, first, the context. I am nearly 60 years old and was an adolescent and young adult during the boom of the second wave of feminism. Yes, we pretty much loathed all things feminine, such as ruffles, high heels, and, yes, pink. As the years have gone by, I have come to understand a few things, one of which is that I was at a loss as to how to be a woman. I didn't know what it meant to be a feminist, autonomous, accomplished, and still female. We didn't have many role models and were casting about for answers, and we couldn't figure out how physical attractiveness could possibly be a part of the equation. Today, I am much more comfortable in my own skin and much less hasty to judge people's personal taste. It is now easier for me to separate appearances from substance and to embrace womanliness. I first began to feel truly feminine when I became pregnant in my early 30s, and for the first time, I started wanting to wear jewelry and to look pretty. Not only that, I felt beautiful, which was a new sensation to me. And right when, by conventional standards, I probably looked my least magazine cover attractive. So now I am more tolerant, especially of young women who are still on that road to self-definition. It's not easy to do, and no one can do it for you. If a girl chooses polka dots, sparkles, glitz, and even cartoonishness, I smile indulgently, no longer assume anything about the beliefs or attitudes she holds below the surface. The only thing I disparage now in the appearance of young girls is over-sexualization. Not because it is or is not in accordance with my personal taste, but because I feel they are demeaning themselves. It breaks my motherly heart. Too bad I didn't start feeling comfortable in my own skin back when my skin was still lovely. Here I am, growing long in the tooth and finally making an effort to look pretty. But I still hate pink. There is no accounting for taste. So thank you, Betty.
Well, I've got one here from Julia, and this is in response to an episode we did a while ago on whether or not women can ask out men, or just the idea of, like, women dating a little more aggressively. And she writes, I'm answering your call for thoughts on women doing the asking in dating situations. I can't speak for lesbians, but I can speak for hetero and bisexual ladies. In the bisexual community, the problem of asking women out comes up so often it's a joke. There were like two sheep sidling up next to each other, no one making eye contact, each one hoping that if we just position ourselves in close proximity, we'll magically end up on a date. And how easy would it be if that's how this worked? She says, many bisexual women don't come out until later in life and have already spent a few years getting asked out by men. Asking people out is a muscle that has to be exercised often. Women are just out of practice. Since I came out as bi, I've been working out, but it's not easy. You mentioned in the podcast the fact that women worry more about the feelings of the other. I found it pretty easy to ignore that impulse with men. Men generally like being asked out, or at least they'll more often tell you directly if they don't. But if I'm asking out a woman, my empathy anticipates her empathy, and I worry double that she will think something unflattering about me when I ask her out, but she won't tell me, and she'll try to be nice because it's probably what I'd do. We second-guess ourselves a lot where dating is concerned, and I'm finding the most success when I take a page out of my hetero male friend's books. In the same way that straight women often need a gay male friend to give them a different point of view and some confidence, bi women can benefit a lot from a guy friend who's not dating material, or at most a friend with benefits. Just make sure your buddy doesn't creep out the ladies and is magnanimous when you call dibs. So, a wing dude. That's what I'm hearing. Well, thanks to Julia and Betty and everyone else who has written in. MomStuff@discovery.com is our email address. Can't wait to hear from everybody. And can't wait to see you over at Facebook, where you can find us. And you can also follow us on Twitter at MomStuffPodcast. And you can follow us on Tumblr as well at stuffmomnevertoldyou.tumblr.com. And don't forget to make yourself smarter during the week by heading over to our website. It's howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. Not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank. Brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.